Hey everybody, welcome to another retro classic episode of the Brian Keane Podcast, where I take an episode from the archives and publish it as a bonus on Friday. Today's episode first aired on the 10th of June, 2019. It's episode 229, 10 Life Lessons I Learned from Running Through the Sahara and the Arctic. This one, I think if you're an endurance athlete or into fitness, you'll get a lot from it, but I think it's more aimed towards the mindset side. If you're trying to kind of get control of your life, get your mindset right based on your goal, then this episode is heavily focused on that side of things. So hopefully you get a lot from it. If it's a re-listen, hopefully you get as much from it this time as you did last time. If it's a new listen for you, hopefully you get a lot of value from it. Also, if you're an email fan and want to get my input or my takeaways from that week's podcast, every single Thursday I send out a podcast. Every Thursday I send out an email of my top three takeaways from that week's podcast. So if you're ever thought about or have ever been curious, what is it that I get from the podcast to do, you know, nearly 400 episodes? And the reason I'm able to keep doing them is because I get so much value from them personally. I pop those into a weekly email and I send them to my newsletter every single Thursday. So to sign up for that, just click on the link in the description in the newsletter section, or head over to briankeenefitness.com and just pop your email into the newsletter and confirm it. And on Thursday, you will get my weekly newsletter, and every single Thursday from that point onwards for as long as you're on the email. So hopefully you enjoy it. So without further ado, here is the first episode that first aired on the 10th of June, 2019, episode 229, 10 Life Lessons I Learned, Running Through the Sahara and the Arctic. Enjoy. The first lesson I learned very much when I signed up for the Sahara to run Marathon de Sob, the six back-to-back marathons, was you need to break big goals into smaller parts. This is a full section at my Rewire Your Mindset seminar because it's so crucial, because we can get, and myself included, and I still get this, I have to be very conscious of it and aware of it, is analysis by paralysis, where you end up setting a big goal for yourself and as a result, it seems so unrealistic that you kind of convince yourself that it's unachievable, and then you don't put any steps in place. And I've done that in the past for so long. That's generally what I would do. I'm like, well, I'd love to do a marathon, or I'd love to do a bodybuilding show, or I'd love to start my own business. All these things that I always said I would love to do. And then when it actually came around to it, I'd be like, oh, fuck. You would see the cost or the effort that would have to go into it. You're like, no, I'm not going to do that. And there's an old saying that the longest journey starts with the first step. And that's kind of what you have to do when you have big goals. You have to break it into the smaller component parts and then focus on that. One of the reasons that I'm so big on getting your day right, you know, if you've listened to this podcast in the past, you know my philosophy on tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year, is based off the principle of you can hit any big, massive goal if you get the day right. You know, tell me what you do in your mornings. Tell me what you do in your workouts. Tell me how you eat your food. Tell me how you show up with your loved ones every single day, and I'll tell you what those relationships, what your job would be like, what your body would be like in a year's time. And when I signed up for the Sahara first, that's where it really took hold, because it was the first time ever I had set a goal so big for myself that even though I had the confidence prior from several ventures that I'd done beforehand, i.e. starting my own business, you know, doing quite well in competitive bodybuilding and fitness modeling, I had a little bit of confidence built up there. But when I signed up for Marathon de Sob in August of 2017 and I ran it in April 2018, I remember thinking, fuck, what have I done? For those of you who are following my journey since then on Snapchat, before they changed the algorithm on Snapchat, I literally put up my 2 kilometer run. The day I signed up for Marathon de Sob, I ran 2 kilometers on the treadmill and I nearly got sick. I hadn't ran in fucking years. A little bit when I played GEA, but it was more sprint based. And I nearly got sick. I remember sitting in the dressing room, I did a Snapchat story, and I was like, what the fuck have I signed up for? I was like, how am I going to run another 248 kilometers, which is effectively more or less what 6 back-to-back marathons are. But that's not what I focused on. I realized that I had to break this into smaller component parts. My first goal was, well, I have to run a marathon. I was like, if I can't run a single marathon, I definitely can't run six back to back. So I broke it down into a pyramid of prioritization. I was like, okay, let's focus on running a marathon first and then gradually building up to multi-day marathons. So I went from 2 kilometers up to 3 kilometers, up to 4 kilometers, up to 5 kilometers. And then I had a jump because you get this kind of switch in gears. For anyone that's ever done running or anyone that's ever joined a gym, you get this kind of switch in gears where what was difficult in the beginning starts to become considerably less difficult as you build up. You know, Robin Sharma's got a great quote, the author of the book of The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, where he says change is very, very difficult at the beginning, messy in the middle, and beautiful at the end. And that's kind of what happens when you start running or starting a new gym program at the beginning. It's really difficult at the start as your body adjusts. And then as you get progressively better, it gets a bit messy and you're not feeling great, but you're feeling better than you did at the beginning. And then by the time you build up to your level where you're comfortable with, it's significantly easier. And that's what happened with my running. I went from 5 kilometers to 10, and then I jumped from 10 to 20 kilometers because there's these massive gaps. Once your body kind of switches over, I became a little bit more fat adapted. My body got a little bit better with the aerobic fitness. I started to drop a little bit of muscle and size, which helped me with my runs. And as a result of that, I built up to a full marathon, which was my first ever marathon in Dubai in 2018, in January 2018. And then 4 months later, I ran the 6 back-to-back marathons in the Sahara Desert. So regardless of what goal you set for yourself, regardless of how big it is, you have to break it down into its smallest component parts. And it doesn't matter what it is. You know, if you're trying to lose 100 pounds, yes, keep the end goal in mind of losing 100 pounds, but focus on losing that first pound, then the next pound, then the next pound, and doing it that way. If you're focusing on running a marathon, don't focus on the 26.2 miles. Focus on, right, can I get this first mile right? And then put one foot in front of the other and keep moving forward. That's how you get to any goal that you set for yourself. Your business is the exact same. Your personal life is the exact same. One of the things my daughter taught me better than anything else is you need to show up the right way every single day in order to cultivate that relationship. It's not about what you do on birthdays. It's not about what you do when you feel like it. You know, successful people do the things they have to do whether they feel like it or not. And if you're trying to cultivate these strong personal relationships, romantic, familial, or business, it's about what you do every day. So when it comes to big goals, set them. I'm a huge believer in, you know, BHAGs, big, hairy, audacious goals. Set yourself a big goal. But don't let the analysis by paralysis or paralysis by analysis kick in where you get so overwhelmed by the goal that you end up not taking any steps at all, which is what a lot of people do. And you're letting your own biggest enemy live between your two ears. So you're actually getting out, talking yourself out of something that you really want because of the cost or the effort that it would take to acquire that thing that you're desiring. And my biggest piece of advice is something I would offer myself if I could go back, is just break the goal down. Focus on the day. Focus on getting today right. When you set your end goal and whatever that end goal is, focus on getting your day right. Because if you have to run a marathon or you have to drop several dress sizes, ask yourself, did I get it right today? Did I get my meals right today? Did I get my training session right today? Did I do everything I needed to do today in order to help me hit that end goal? Okay, the lesson 2 that I learned is pain goes away. And if you've listened to my podcast episode, I think it was 213, on running 230 kilometers through the Arctic Circle, I spoke heavily on that episode. You can tell because I recorded it right when I got back and I was fucking sore because I tore my Achilles 86 kilometers from the end and just fucking ran through on the torn Achilles, and I paid for it. You know, it took me 3 months, like literally last week was my first run because I couldn't run for 3 months after. I could barely walk. But it understanding that pain will go away. And you can kind of tell from my emotion in that episode that it was a bit fucking rawer than now. Now I'm like, da la 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 la, like I can run, I'm fine. But it does reinforce the idea that pain goes away. And I remember telling myself that in the Arctic. Like, when, and again, you don't have to run to the Arctic to get the same experience. I had a girl at my Rewire Your Mindset seminar in, when was the last one? February or March, I can't fucking remember. My last Rewire Your Mindset seminar in Dublin. A girl that was going through a really bad time in the hospital. and was listening to that Arctic Circle episode and was like, that was the thing that got me through. She was like, my pain and discomfort will go away right now. She goes, it's temporary and it will go away. And I remember welling up a little bit when she told me this at the seminar afterwards, because you don't expect your words to hit in ways like that. You know, when I spoke about pain going away, I was talking about physical pain, but it made me realize that pain, emotional pain, mental trauma, whatever it is you're going through, it passes. It will pass. And understanding that from a visceral level, when I was running on, which was the most pain I've ever been in my life, when my Achilles tore 86 kilometers from the end, it was minus 38 degrees. I was fucking frozen. And I remember I was just, everything hurt. Like, for those of you that's ever torn a muscle, you understand that when you move on that muscle, it can send a lot of pain through the rest of your body. And I remember my fucking ears and my nose were radiating pain because of my Achilles. It felt like it was shooting up my spine. And I remember at the time just repeating to myself, this will go away, this will go away, this will go away. You know, pain is temporary. It will eventually subside. You know, it might take a few days, a few weeks, a few months, even a few years, but eventually it will subside. And I had to keep repeating that in my head, because it's very, very easy to stop when things get difficult. And in this case, it was running through the Arctic Circle, but that's how life is in general. It's very, very easy to stop doing something you want to do because of the pain or the cost or the effort that comes alongside it, be it physical, emotional, or just mental pain that comes with doing something. That's why it's so important to make sure your ladder is up against the right wall. For those of you who read my book, The Fitness Mindset, or have been to my Rewire Your Mindset seminars, this is a massive part of it, where I've regularly said on this podcast that you're better to be at the bottom of the ladder against the right wall than halfway up the ladder against the wrong wall, because there's a very hollow feeling that comes with climbing a ladder against a figurative wall in business, in a romantic relationship, in your physical pursuits of, you know, your body composition, the way you want to look. And then getting to the top of that ladder and be like, oh, fuck, I'm against the wrong wall. And especially if it's causing you physical or emotional pain on the way, because when you get up there, you're like, fuck, what was the point? And that only happens when your ladder's up against the wrong wall. When you're climbing a ladder against a job that you love, a relationship that you know is right, a goal that you've set for yourself that you know is going to make you a stronger version of you, that pain is part of it. And if it comes, it will go away. And I had to keep reminding myself of that. I'm like, okay, you set the goal of running through the Arctic Circle. You've 230 kilometers from the beginning, 86 kilometers when my Achilles tore. I'm like, you need to keep fucking going. I was like, you can quit now. And sure, at some stage, you will be at home. It'll be comfortable. You'll have food in your stomach. It'll be normal temperature. But if you quit now at 86 kilometers from the end, I was like, that shit's going to last you forever. I was like, that's not going anywhere. You have no choice. If you quit now, you have to stick with that feeling, because there's nothing you can do. You've quit. And what's worse is that negative self-talk, that voice in your head tells you to quit, because it's so fucking persuading, because it comes in and you hear this little fucking demon on your shoulder going, yeah, quit, quit. Your Achilles is torn. You might rupture it, which is something I was told by the medics. And you can't let that expand. You know, what you focus on is what expands. And every time that thought entered my head, I had to put it out of my head, because otherwise you end up giving too much energy to it and you end up expanding to the point that you end up quitting. And I've done that in the past, and I had to learn from the mistake from previous ventures that I quit and regretted afterwards. But pain goes away, and I feel even more qualified to speak on it now, because I did my first run in 3 months having ran through the Arctic Circle. And I'm like, yeah, it was a little sore today. My Achilles hurt a little bit during my run, but it wasn't too bad. You know, it was manageable, and it goes away. And in 3 months more, it's going to be even better. And in a year's time, it's not even going to be, it'll be a past distant memory. Pain will go away. If your ladder is up against the right wall, then whatever it is that you're doing and whatever goal you've set for yourself, every step gets you closer to that end goal. Even if it hurts, it's getting you closer. But you have to understand that that pain will go away. But if you quit, if you decide and make a decision to not continue because of that pain, you will fucking regret it. I guarantee it. I've done it in the past with things where I've quit because of pain and discomfort. And you regret that. There's nothing wrong with changing your mind and realizing that the cost and the effort isn't worth the reward, that's different. If you're in a bad relationship, sometimes you gotta cut ties. If you hate your job, but you're climbing that ladder, sometimes it's worth just questioning this pain, is it worth the price? Or if you change your mind and decide, yeah, I actually want the paycheck even though I hate my job, then sometimes it's okay to continue going. Or not even sometimes, it is of course okay to continue going if you make that decision. But quitting because of pain and quitting because of discomfort is a choice. And if you do that, I guarantee you'll regret it. And understand that any pain, emotional, mental, or physical that you're going through will pass. Lesson three then is you need to build up mental strength slowly every day. And I recorded a very popular podcast at the end of last year on 8 critical habits for building mental toughness. I'll link it in the show notes as well. It was one of my most downloaded episodes of last year. And I spoke in there about doing things gradually every day that make you a little bit mentally stronger. And the analogy I like to use for building mental toughness and building mental strength is like sweeping the floor. If you sweep the floor in your kitchen or in your bedroom today, it'll be clean. But if you don't do it every day, it will gradually get dirty again. In this case, your mindset will get weaker again. And I think it's important to have some form of pillar or foundation pillar of mental toughness or mental strength that you do every day that makes you stronger. And for some people, it looks completely different. For me, it's running. That's why not running the last few months, I had to kind of switch my priorities on what would build my mental toughness, because I love working out. I love training. I love weight training. I love HIIT workouts, but I fucking hate running. But every time I run, it makes me a little bit mentally stronger because I'm doing something I know I need to do to hit an end goal, but I don't feel like doing it ever. I never fucking feel like doing my runs. Like every session, I'm like, oh, bollocks, I gotta fucking run today. But that makes me mentally tougher. And then every time I do it, it makes other things in your life easy. You know, I live my life by the adage that if you do what is easy, your life will be hard. And if you do what is hard, your life will be easy. And if you can condition yourself to build up that mental strength and condition yourself to do things that you know you need to do, whether you feel like it or not, that can play over into all other areas of your life. I know my relationships with people that are that in my inner circle are better because of my ability to lean into discomfort, my ability to have conversations that I don't want to have because I run when I don't want to run. I get up early in the morning when I don't want to get up. These pillars of mental strength, you build up slowly every day. When I was on Marcus Smith, who's been on this podcast twice, I fucking love Marcus, he's awesome. I was on his podcast, Inner Fight, talking about the Ice Ultra, talking about the Arctic Circle run. And he was asking about my training. And I did most of my training on a treadmill for my runs just because of time constraints, my schedule, and just basically the way it was the only way I could get my runs in a lot of the times in the morning because of other work commitments and life and family commitments. And he asked me about building up mental strength. He was like, you know, how did you find your training? And I was like, I built up mental strength by running on a treadmill every day because it bore me to fucking tears. And that's the secret. You don't build up mental toughness overnight. You don't do one thing that you wake up the following morning and you're like, yeah, I'm mentally tough. You have to fucking stay on top of it. And I remember when I came back from the Sahara, I have a story about this in my new book, which will be out before the end of the year. When I came back from the Sahara, for those of you who've listened to that episode 150, like I felt unstoppable when I came back because I felt like all my self-created limitations have been just blown out of the water, because until I crossed the finish line in the Sahara, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do it. But with that came a little bit of hubris and cockiness that wasn't necessarily supportive, not in the sense of, you know, fucking peacocking around people, but in the sense that I'm like, yeah, I can set any challenge and I can do it comfortably enough. And that manifested itself in me not qualifying or me not finishing a race in Barcelona. I signed up to a 76 kilometer ultra marathon in Barcelona in November of last year in preparation for the Arctic. And I just fucking rocked up to Barcelona with what I thought was a road race in Barcelona. And it was like up fucking Mount Tibidabo in the fucking forest on the trails. And I landed up in a pair of road shoes. I didn't have any of the preparation. And I just kind of thought, well, I've ran, you know, 86 kilometers on the long day in the Sahara, which is a double marathon. I was like, I'll breeze 76 kilometers. So I didn't really train for it. I didn't really have my mindset right. I kind of just rocked up thinking, yeah, no bother. This would be easy. And I landed out there, and then I ended up getting lost, running the wrong direction, and timing out. So I didn't end up finishing that race. It ended up cutting short at like 52 kilometers. And I remember thinking, you got mentally weak. I remember thinking, you know, pride comes before the fall. One of my favorite pieces from the Bible. I'm not very religious, but I do love some of the verses from the Bibles. And pride comes before the fall. And I'm like, you fucking deserve to fail this. I was like, you went out there with the wrong attitude. I was like, you shouldn't have thought you were going to rock up to Barcelona and just run 76 kilometers without training properly first, just because you had previous success through the Sahara. And I remember it ate at me for about 3 weeks, you know. I was like, you didn't. I was so annoyed at myself because I thought I had a higher standard for myself. And I literally let my hubris kick in to, yeah, you'll do this, no bother. And I remember thinking, if you go to the Arctic, you're going to die. I was like, if you go to the Arctic with this attitude, you're going to fucking die. And from that point, you know, most future successes grow out of the seeds of failure. And that was a failure, but it was feedback to never approach anything like that again. And to not let your mental strength soften, because I hadn't been staying on top of my runs. I hadn't been staying on top of my mental toughness. I just kind of landed out to Barcelona thinking this will be no problem. And it reinforced the idea that you have to stay on top of these things. You have to clean the floor every day. You know, it's the same as showering. You can shower today and you'll be clean, but if you leave it a week, you're not going to be clean anymore. You have to do it every day. So you build up your mental strength slowly every day by doing things that make you a little bit uncomfortable, whatever that is for you. That might be getting up a little bit earlier in the morning. That might be doing your run on a treadmill. That might be stepping foot in the gym because you hate working out, even though you know it maps to the end goal of what you're trying to achieve. Build your mental strength slowly every day by doing things that make you a little bit uncomfortable. The danger is in the dose. Don't go crazy every day in discomfort to the point that you blow up and you're like, no, fuck that. I'm never joining the gym again, or I'm never going for a run again, or I'm never getting out of bed early in the morning again. Do it gradually. Something slow. An extra 10 minutes early in the morning. An extra 5 minutes on the treadmill. An extra set or a few extra reps in your workout. Build your mental strength slowly every day by getting comfortable being uncomfortable. Okay, number four, all limitations are self-created. This I expanded on a lot more details in the Sahara podcast, and I just wanted to kind of touch on it here, because every limitation you have, any place in your life you haven't brought conscious awareness to, what I call in my Rewire Your Mindset seminar, the parts of your life on autopilot, where you just haven't brought conscious awareness to it, what you're doing on autopilot. Those limitations are self-created. And we all have an area of our life that's on autopilot. I spoke on Joanne Larrabee's podcast, The Other Side of Perfect, that my area for years was romantic relationships. It was always my weak area because it was my part of my life that was on autopilot. I just kind of let it happen, where I was very conscious with the food I was eating. I was very conscious with my training programs. I was very conscious with what I was doing in my business. But I would let romantic relationships kind of just happen. And it made me realize that we all have parts of our life that are on autopilot. That's something I brought conscious awareness to and have significantly tried to improve my deficiencies in that area. But when we all have a version of that. You know, when I used to work one-to-one as a personal trainer, a lot of my overweight clients had autopilot around their food and their eating. They kind of never really thought about it. You know, one of the reasons you can get overweight and obese is just you're not bringing any conscious awareness to what you're eating. And, you know, mindfulness is the very in word right now. But being mindful of what you're eating, being mindful of how much food you're consuming, being mindful of the choices you're making. And piggybacking that is that those limitations, anything that you set for yourself is self-created. And a lot of the times, it's just because you haven't brought conscious awareness to the weakness that you have in your life. And weakness isn't bad. Like, this is a cultural thing that fucking does my head in when I hear it. Where people are like, yeah, you know, you hide your weaknesses, you know, focus on your strengths. Which, yes, you should. Bring your weaknesses to competence and double down on your strengths in most cases. But weaknesses aren't a bad thing. Failure isn't a bad thing. These are good fucking things. They're giving you feedback on how you can improve your life. If you have a weakness in some area of your life where you don't focus on the foods you're eating, you're like, okay, that's a weakness. Now I need to improve on it. If you have a failure because you've tried a new diet or a new training program, or and you went out on a couple of dates with somebody, or you've tried a business venture and it's failed a couple of times, cool. You have feedback now on what not to do next time. Every failure in your life is feedback if you choose to create it. But those limitations normally come from fear. And I went through so much of my life disguising fear as practicality. I remember when I left my teaching job to start my own business. For years, I wanted to start my own fitness business, but I was afraid. And I would disguise fear as practicality. I'm like, okay, it's not practical. The general words you hear when people are disguising fear as practicality is, oh, I don't have time for that right now. You know, or I'll do it someday, or I'll do it when I have more time. You know, the disease of someday is a chapter in my new book where you're constantly focusing on, no, I'll do that sometime, someday. And it gives you this feeling of relief initially, because you're like, okay, I am going to do it. I am going to get in shape. I am going to get a relationship. I am going to start my own business. I'm just not going to do it now. It's like, you don't fucking know if you're going to get another day. I was like, that disease is someday. You might get hit by a fucking bus tomorrow. And that's the reality. That's the truth. Like, shit can happen. And when you realize that you're not necessarily going to get every single day as many days as you want, and someday never fucking comes, and you realize that all your limitations that you've created, that I can't do this or I can't do that, they're all opinions. They're all opinions that either you have reinforced by telling yourself over and over again, or somebody else has reinforced by telling you over and over again. A lot of the times, that voice of you can't was put there by somebody else. A parent, a teacher, somebody told you you weren't good enough. Somebody told you you weren't smart enough. Somebody told you you weren't worthy enough in some capacity, and you held on to that opinion, and you just told yourself over and over again until it became reinforced as a belief. That's a self-created limitation. That's an opinion that's been reinforced. You have to question your self-created limitations. You have to question your beliefs for the largest part, because a lot of those beliefs are just reinforced opinions that have been hammered down over the years. My default thought process for so long was, I can't do this and I can't do that. And when I would see somebody else doing something I wanted to do, so in mine, this shows up differently for everybody, but in my, what I wanted to do when I was in my early 20s was, well, I'd love to do a bodybuilding show, or I'd love to do a marathon, and I'd love to start my own business. They're the kind of the three that I jumped to, because my default in all three of those were, that's what other people do. I'm like, other people do bodybuilding shows. Other people run marathons. Other people start their own businesses. I was like, that's not what I do. That's not true. That's an opinion. That's not a fact. And when I started to question that, because generally what followed it was all the reasons why. Because when you tell yourself you can't do something, you tend to get very confirming evidence that follows it. You're like, oh yeah, I'm not big enough for bodybuilding. Oh yeah, I don't have the genetics for bodybuilding. Oh yeah, I don't like running, so I can't do a marathon. Oh yeah, I'm not smart enough, or I don't have this or that degree, I can't do a business. All these thoughts that enter your head that will confirm your belief that you can't do something, you have to fucking question that, regardless of what that is. You know, take ownership of it. Take full, extreme ownership and responsibility for every fucking thought you've had up to this point, and question those limitations. Because the one thing I can guarantee, if you go through the rest of your life not questioning your limitations, you will continue to have those limitations. But if you question them, and instead of saying you can't do something, ask yourself, how can I do something? Start to see how your mindset shifts. Start to see how it expands and how all these other possibilities start to flood in. All confirming bias on, I could run a marathon if I did this. I could do a bodybuilding show if I did that. I could set up my own business if I lived my life this way. You know, something I spoke about in the fitness mindset, my first book, was become the person you need to be and then make decisions as that person and just wait for reality to catch up. So if you want to be leaner, you want to lose weight, and you want to look a certain way, then make decisions as if you already lived like that. Make the food choices of somebody leaner. Make training decisions as somebody who's fit and healthy. Start making decisions as the person who's already done that. Fast forward into the future, vision what you look like in that scenario, and then make decisions as that person, and then wait for reality to catch up. All limitations are self-created, and if you don't question them, they will continue to be limitations. They will continue to be glass ceilings going forward. That's something I fucking wish I knew. Like, Jesus, if I had known that earlier in life, I would have done things a lot. I wouldn't change my path for anything, because your mess becomes your message. But fuck, I wish I knew that. That every story I told myself, every limitation I'd created, I created them. They were all self-created. And until I started to question them, until you start to question them, which is the advice I'd offer myself, until you start to question them, you'll never get over them. Which ties in a little bit with number five. And I've actually opened, it's the very first line in my new book, which I think is going to be titled Rewire Your Mindset. I haven't fully decided on that yet. But the working title right now is Rewire Your Mindset. I want to control it, change it. And that's that your own worst enemy lives between your two ears. This is one of my favorite quotes from Buddha. And the more I put myself out there with physical challenges, such as the Sahara and the Arctic, and I'll use myself because you're your own best example, the more I realize that there is no environmental issue or situation that's the problem. It's your mindset that's the problem. And I remember when I was running through the Arctic, particularly when my Achilles tore, I remember thinking, this isn't the situation you need to control. I was like, you have no control over the situation first. You know, I love the serenity prayer. You know, God grant me the serenity to understand the things I can't change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And, you know, I know they're religious, you swear I'm super religious, but I do like some of the stuff from, you know, some of the best books, which is the Bible, the best books. Definitely give the Bible a read. It's awesome. Like, no, but some of the quotes in the Bible I really like. That serenity prayer really serves me with control, particularly if you're like type A bit of a control freak by default. Understand that you need to, yes, control the things that are within your control, but let go of the things that aren't, and you will be significantly happier and feel less stress, worry, and anxiety because of it. But your own worst enemy living between your two ears is very important for understanding that it's not the situation that's the problem. I couldn't control the minus 38 degrees. I couldn't even control a torn Achilles. But I could control my mindset, and I could control what I focused on. And instead of focusing on the pain, which is very, very, I'm not going to lie, it's not easy to shift your focus to something else when you're feeling extreme physical pain. And I'm sure emotional trauma is the exact same. But extreme physical pain, I would switch my mind to focus on putting one foot in front of the other. And literally putting my right foot, and then my left foot, and then my right foot, and then my left foot. And repeatedly doing that. Because that enemy between your two ears pops out otherwise. That enemy that tells you you can't do something. That enemy that tells you you should quit. That enemy that tells you you're not good enough, not worthy enough, not smart enough. That enemy lives between your two fucking ears. It's not the world's problem. It's not the situation. It's not your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your husband, your wife, your boss, the person at the gym, the person who cut you off in traffic. It's your reaction to it. It's your mindset. You have full control. Every single thing in your life, you've interjected perspective into it. You are seeing it and choosing to see it a certain way, sometimes supportive and sometimes not. But that enemy lives between your two ears. You can't control the physical world. You can't control the environment. You can't control other fucking people. Like, if you've got a fucking cunt of a boss, like, you can't control that. You know, you can't control people and their interpretation of what you say. This is something I say so regularly on my social platforms, that if people ever throw negativity in my way, one, I understand projection and how, you know, hurt people, you know, I spoke on podcast 158, how to handle negative people. It's something that I really understand, that people project a lot of their own insecurities onto you, which, you know, is up to you how you want to handle it as the person receiving it. But I also can't control how people interpret what I put out there. Because a lot of interpretations on what you say or do is based on people's experiences. I remember when I left my teaching job to start my own business, I remember family members telling me I was an absolute fucking idiot. And now looking back, you know, I have a very popular part in my book, the mindset section of the fitness mindset, about how people change their opinions based on new facts. How the people that told me I was an idiot 3 years later when the book hit the bestseller list were like, I knew you were going to make it. I'm like, you fucking didn't. I was like, you were literally the cunt that told me that I wasn't. And I understood then that that's how people are. Hindsight bias is, you know, a cognitive bias where people look back on hindsight, and when new information is given, they change their opinion. That's why recognizing opinions and facts and that they're two different things are very, very important, because everybody has a fucking opinion. And when I realized that, I was able to make new decisions based on that information, because I stopped making decisions based on other people's opinions. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do what I think is right. I'm going to do what I think is in line with my internal compass. I'm going to talk about it with a couple of inner circle and people whose opinions I trust. And then I'm just going to make my decision and do it, because it's not up to me how it gets interpreted by other people. When you realize that people will offer opinions based on their experiences and their biases. When I look back now, several years later, I realize that my family members, particularly the ones that told me I weren't going to make it, were the ones at the time, they probably meant it from a good place, because they had worked 9-to-5 jobs, some of them government jobs. They thought security meant working a 9-to-5, working Monday to Friday, having the weekends off, getting a pension, you know, retiring and dying. Like that, you know, that's not what they'd say, but that's what they thought. And when I understood that when I made decisions based off what they said, or made decisions based off their opinion, that was me just feeding my enemy between my two ears, because I wasn't super secure in my decision-making process. When you realize that every decision you make, everything that happens to you, good, bad, indifferent, it's all the perspective that you're choosing to interject into that given situation. It's not what happens to us that bothers us. It's how we respond to it or how we perceive it. Somebody calling you an insult, or somebody calling you fat or ugly or stupid. And I've spoken about this in the past, about the purple polar bear, about how some comments connect and resonate and others don't. And it's important to recognize those, because there's a learning opportunity. If somebody calls you a name or an insult and it lands and resonates, you have a learning opportunity to use that and deal with that part of yourself that you haven't been comfortable with up until this point. But that enemy lives between your two ears. Every situation, it's not about what happens to you. It's about how you respond to it and how you choose to perceive it. The psychological term is called contextual reframing, where you contextually reframe a given situation until it's supportive to you, or until it's negative to you. You can frame it whatever way you want. It goes pro and con. But realize that nothing changes. The outside world is outside of your control. People's opinions and how they interpret what you do and say is outside of your control. What your boss says about you, what your family members say about you, what anybody says or thinks about you is outside of your control. And if you can get control of that enemy between your two ears, you can get control of your mindset, then none of that matters. You become a fortress. You build a fucking wall. You end up building this fortress in your mind that is bulletproof. And you get conscious with who you let in. You have your inner circle of 4 or 5 people whose opinions count, and everybody else outside of that doesn't. Because there's a fortress, you're bulletproof. But that starts, building that wall, building that fortress starts with understanding that your own enemy lives between your two ears. Lesson number 6 then is, you can't do things for other people. It needs to be for you and you alone. And to expand on this, one of the ways I make decisions, I spoke about this in my business podcast, and there's a little bit of a section of it in my new book as well. That's why a lot of this is fresh. I'm like, oh, let's fucking talk to the new book. I'm like, it's not even out yet. It's fucking out like the end of the year. But understanding that making decisions, a good way to make decisions, and this is something I apply to my own life, is what would I do if nobody was watching? Because when I say, tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year, it normally implies that you're doing things when nobody's watching, because people who run marathons are normally training when nobody's watching. People who are stepping on bodybuilding shows are normally training and eating meals when nobody's watching. Even though on social media we get the highlight reel of what somebody's doing, there's so many other parts of their day that we don't see. People that are doing successful in their business are potentially getting up earlier and getting their work done and then responding and putting out fires the rest of the day. We don't see that. But that's why it's so important to make a decision based on doing it for yourself and yourself alone. And the reason I say this is because things get so difficult, particularly when you set big goals, like I spoke about earlier, about breaking big goals down into smaller component parts. Things get really difficult. Whatever goal you set for yourself gets difficult. I'm not going to fucking sit here and tell you that losing weight, starting a business, doing all these things you're dreaming of is easy, because it's not fucking easy. Because if it was easy, everybody would do it. But it is worth it. When you have something inside you and you have a dream or desire inside you that you're trying to achieve and go after, it is fucking worth it. But it is hard. And I love Steve Jobs, who founded Apple, has a great video on YouTube online, a commencement speech, I think it's at Stanford University in California. And he speaks about that you need to love what you do, because anybody sane would give up ages ago because it's too difficult. And that's why when you do things, it has to be for you. If you set a goal or a target for yourself, ask yourself, would I do this if nobody was watching? And see what comes back. Because when you make decisions off the opinions of others, which is a lot of it we do subconsciously. You know, I've done this in the past myself. You know, I've done it romantically in relationships where I'm like, yeah, you know, that girl, you know, if you were going out with a model, you're like, yeah, fuck, she looks great on my Instagram, like, or like before Instagram, like, or she looks great on my social media, or my friends will think, you know, they'll be super jealous. You do a lot of these things subconsciously. You know, my fucking vanity metrics, my junk values popping out right there, which is something I've had to address significantly over the years. But earlier in life, it was an area that I never brought conscious awareness to. But I didn't do that for me, because I remember looking back on a couple of those relationships in my early 20s and thinking, fuck, if nobody was watching, there's no chance I would have stayed seeing this person or this girl, because, you know, they were, you know, a model or whatever it was, from that side. And that same thing happens when you set a goal in fitness, because if you're doing it to get the Instagram photo, that might not be strong enough, or that might not be enough of a driver to get you out of bed to do your workouts or get your meals in when you don't want to. But if you are doing it, one of my mentors used to say to me to always ask the question why, or ask why three times to get to the root of a goal. One of the ones that always jumps to mind, I remember working one-to-one as a personal trainer with a girl who came to me about losing weight. And after a few sessions, she was kind of falling on and off the wagon. And I remember asking her, sitting her down one day, I was like, okay, why do you want to lose weight? She was like, okay, you know, I want to lose weight because I want to get my scale down. I want to fit into my dresses. But when I actually pulled back the curtain, I was like, okay, tell me really, why do you want to lose weight? She goes, I want to lose weight because I want to feel more confident when I walk into a room. I was like, okay, well, why do you want to feel more confident when you walk into a room? She goes, I want to feel more confident when I walk into a room because guys never approach me. She goes, and I don't feel confident and I don't feel sexy. I'm like, okay, you want to feel confident. Why do you want to have guys approach you? She's like, because I'd love to have a partner or a boyfriend. I'm like, well, why would you love to have a partner or a boyfriend? She's like, because I feel really lonely. I'm like, okay, bingo. I was like, now we got it. I was like, loneliness is the driving factor here, which then you can choose when you have that information. In that context, it was a driver that I used to help keep her on track. But you can also use it to identify that, oh, there's other tools in your toolkit that could potentially help you fix this problem. She didn't necessarily have to lose weight, because if she went out the next day and found a boyfriend, that loneliness may potentially have disappeared. So we would have had to set a new driver or a new metric for success, i.e. losing weight for health or longevity, or to feel confident and sexy the first time she slept with her new boyfriend, or anything along those lines. So that's kind of when you're working with people directly, you're finding what's intrinsically and extrinsically motivating people. Intrinsic motivation is jumping out of bed in the morning to get your workout done because you've got to run a half marathon. Extrinsic is, I want to post that photo on social media. There's a big difference, because one, the intrinsic motivation you're going to do yourself, it's coming from within, and the extrinsic motivation is coming from without. And that is a very, very difficult process to hit any end goal when you're being purely driven from extrinsic motivation. So you can't do things for other people. It needs to be for you. By all means, if you get the Instagram photo, if you get the plaudits and the accolades from whatever it is that you've set for yourself, that's all brilliant. But that needs to be part of the process and not the reason for doing it. I can tell you, as someone who's made decisions for the wrong reasons because of what other people would think, and I spent a large part of my life making decisions what other people would think. The colleges I went to, the jobs that I did, the girlfriends I went out with, the people I surrounded myself with were all based on what other people would think. And I can't give you a recipe for happiness, but I can give you a recipe for fucking misery. And that's making too many decisions based on other people's opinions. Then lesson number 7 is kind of separate. This is one that I've been thinking about a lot recently. And that's that people put you on a pedestal and they shouldn't. And the reason I say this is I've noticed this myself. And I'm very mindful of it because of the pride coming before the fall and hubris. And, you know, one of my metrics for life is like, just don't be a dick. And what can happen, and I've noticed this with other influencers that I'm friends with or other people that are quote unquote outwardly successful with social media followers or whatever it is that they're doing, whatever given sport they're in. And you talk to them and they're like, oh, you're a bit of a dick. Like, because they've got a super high opinion of themselves. And I probably suppose that mirrors back to me probably how I was in earlier life where I had a higher opinion of myself, or else I projected out a peacocked opinion of myself because I was feeling quite insecure in my own self-worth, and I would peacock out confidence even though it wasn't real, it was fake. But people put you on a pedestal and they shouldn't. And the reason I say that is when people hear, and you may be one of these people listening, when you hear me running through 6 back-to-back marathons in the Sahara or running through the Arctic, they're 2 examples, particularly if you do any sort of running because you have a baseline for that, sounds really hard. You can put people on a pedestal and think what I said earlier, that it's like, yeah, they can do that, but I can't do that. That's just not true. And I also want to kind of sync that with, you don't have to run through the Sahara and you don't have to run through the Arctic. But don't put people on pedestals. Use them as inspiration for things that you could potentially do. Now, there's certain things that people are more genetically inclined to be good at. You know, I'm 5'8", built like a fucking hobbit, probably not going to play in the NBA anytime soon. But that doesn't mean that you can't look at people who are doing things that you want to do and strive to do things similar. And when you realize that the people who have done great things or whatever it is that you perceive as valuable and they've done things that you would like to do, they're no different from you or me. They're just doing something, have a different goal and have a different mindset, and they've consistently prioritized hitting that goal every day. You know, the more business people I speak to, particularly the people in the high 7 figures, some in 8, you know, multimillionaire friends that I have that are business owners, most of them are business owners, just because that's who I connect with, the conferences that I go to, and they have super successful revenue generating businesses. Some serve thousands of people all over the world. And when I talk to them, I'm like, fuck, because I used to put those people on a pedestal. I used to put people who were able to earn, say, 6 figures and then 7 figures and then later 8 figures on a pedestal, where I'm like, fuck, I'm like, that's so amazing what they do. And then when I would talk to them, I'm like, they're just like me. I was like, but they have a different value structure. They prioritize their life in a certain way to make sure their business is the first thing that they do every single day. It's the thing that becomes their priority number one. And as a result, they're just reaping the results of consistently providing value to people or serving people in a particular way, however it is that they do it. And it made me realize that I started to see that with people doing it to me. When, particularly if I had somebody that wanted to build up a social media following or start a podcast or, you know, do a run or a half marathon or a full marathon. And they would talk and go, well, no, well, you did that. You know, geez, I could never do that. I'm like, no. Maybe you don't want to do that. That's a different question. Maybe you don't want to run through the Sahara, run through the Arctic. That's completely different. But you could. And most people could. If you aligned what you do every day with hitting that end goal. Now, you may have to adjust the time frame. That's a big fucking difference. You know, one of the mindset tips I gave at the end of the fitness mindset was, don't adjust the goal, adjust the time frame. Because you can have your end goal, it just might take a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Adjust the time frame. I'm a massive believer that nearly no goal is unrealistic, but the time frame may be unrealistic. If somebody comes to me and says, I want to lose 100 pounds in 3 months, you know, or in 3 weeks, I'm like, okay, well, that time frame is probably unrealistic, but can you do it in 3 months? Can you do it in, or can you do it in 6 months, in 12 months, in 18 months? Yes, you probably can, and you can probably do it in a very sustainable way. Adjust the time frame, not the goal, because putting people on a pedestal just means that they've done different things to you up to this point. Comparing your chapter 1 to somebody else's chapter 20 is ludicrous, and we all do it. You know, I love the Theodore Roosevelt quote that comparison is a thief of joy. I do it myself and have to be very conscious and catch it. We're like, okay, well, that person's been clearly doing more in that realm for longer than me. Why would I be at chapter 20? Of course I'm at chapter 1. I've just started. Don't put other people on pedestals. Use them as inspirations for achieving things that you want to achieve, but don't put them on pedestals. Lesson number 8 then is something I used to hear from my French teacher when I was in secondary school. And he used to fucking hammer this home. And that's, if you fail to prepare, prepare to fail. And he used to always say it around exams, you know, in his French accent. He was like, if you fail to prepare, prepare to fail. That's the worst fucking French accent ever. I don't know what the fuck that was. Moving on. Well, that's staying in the podcast. Like, just hope that doesn't make the fucking in clip on the Instagram show notes. Anyways, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. And I always remember that quote because that's something that I used to apply a lot to sport. You know, when I played GA and then when I went into bodybuilding, if you can call bodybuilding a sport, it's more aesthetic, you know, poodle, you look pretty. But it's a sport in the sense that the training and the lead up to it is very sport specific. And if you fail to prepare, prepare to fail is a good mantra for anything that you apply. And I think back to Barcelona, the ultramarathon that I didn't finish on, you know, several months before the Arctic. And that was a high case of failing to prepare and not to be surprised in when you fail. Because I had to like take, I remember for those 3 weeks after, I had to kind of self-reflect because I was feeling so shit about myself. I'm like, well, fuck, why did you approach it that way? Because that's the thing when you fail. When you fail something first, sometimes it's hard to see the nugget of gold within the failure initially because it's too emotionally raw. And I understand that, having fucking had probably more failures than anybody, that when it's raw, when you've just had a recent breakup, when you've just had a business failure, when you've just had a, you know, an injury from doing something stupid in the gym, it's, you're too emotionally attached to it right then. It's too raw. And you actually can't generally see, in my case anyway, you can't generally see the seed right there and then. But several weeks later, several months later, you can. And I remember at the time I was really beating myself up. And then about 3 weeks later, I'm like, look, you didn't prepare for this. I'm like, don't bang your head off a wall, figuratively, and then wonder why your head is sore. I'm like, don't not prepare for an event and then wonder why you failed it. And when I got real with that and took full responsibility for it and really owned it, I got an amazing lesson out of that, you know, because it served me since. It served me in the Arctic and it served me in a lot of decisions I've made from that point. That was in November of last year. I'll never go to something again without preparing for it. I either just won't do it, either an event, a business decision, or whatever decision I make, or else I'll go whole in, prepare for it, and make sure that I've given it my all. But if you fail to prepare for something, you need to be prepared to fail. But the beauty of that is it's your choice. The beauty of that is you can control that. You have full control on how much effort you put into something. That's why I'm a massive believer that hard work and effort nearly beats everything else, because you can control that. You know, when I played sport, I work with a lot of GA players, and when I'm working on a couple of them with their mindset, that's something I tell them. I'm like, focus on your game. I'm like, focus on that. You can focus on how well you play. You can focus on the hard work you put in. You can't focus on whether you win or lose. You have no control. Our apologies. You can't control whether you win or lose. You can only control how much effort you put into this game. TJ Reid, who's the captain of Kilkenny, former player of the year, who I do a lot of work with, fucking love TJ's attitude towards life. Like, he's the epitome of this, where he controls everything within his control. He controls his nutrition, he controls his training, he controls his rest, and then everything else as well, it falls as it falls. And that's one of the reasons he's probably going to go down as one of the greatest players of all time. I spoke with him on my GA Lean Body podcast as well, an interview last year. You can go check that out. For any GA players or any hurling fans or TJ fans. And that mindset, that's what makes the greats, because they understand that focusing on things within their control allows them to prepare for the best way that they can. And then if you fail, that's different. If something doesn't go your way, if you lose and you put absolutely everything into it, there's nothing wrong with that. Because sometimes you can't win everything. Sometimes you have no choice. You can't win every single game you play. But if you play to the best of your ability, if you train to the best of your ability, if you did absolutely everything and left no stone unturned, you'll get to an end goal and go, fuck, okay, there was nothing else I could have done. You know, that's how I was with my training for the Arctic. And the same for the Sahara the year before. I'm like, okay, if something bad happens outside of my control, in the Sahara, if I get bitten by a snake, or the Arctic, I get frostbite because of the fucking minus 38 degrees. Man, that was fucking cold. I can't control that. I was like, I've done absolutely everything I could have done to ensure that I get to the finish line in both of these races. And there's a solace that comes with that. There's an inner peace and a serenity that comes with that from knowing that you've done everything. So understand that control the controllables, control the things that you can control. But if you fail to prepare, you need to prepare to fail. Okay, number 9, you can't give yourself an option to quit or you will take it. And this is something that this could be just a massive personality flaw within me. And I'm going to mention it in the hopes that it resonates with at least one or two people. And that's, if you give yourself a plan B, it distracts from plan A, and there's a good chance that you'll take an out if you give it to yourself. Now, I don't know if I have enough self-awareness or wider awareness of other people and how they are, but I know myself, if I give myself an option to quit, I normally take it. And this is having experienced several times, fuck man, I quit so many things in my life, you know, to do with courses, to do with classes, where I'm like, nah, fuck that, that's too hard, I'm not doing that. And when I give myself an option to quit, I generally take it. And it's a little bit of self-awareness on my part that it's a weak flaw of my character. And I don't know exactly where it's came from, but it's something that I'm aware of. And it's one of the reasons now that I don't give myself an out. If you listen to the podcast on the Sahara 150 or 151, I spoke about that I made a decision before I went out there that I was either leaving in an ambulance or I was finishing the race. And that mindset and that approach, as crazy as it is and as nuts as it can sound, and I'm not saying that that's what everybody else should do. In fact, it's probably not ideal advice for most people. But for me, I have to be able to not have an out. I can't have a plan B, because if I give myself a plan B, I generally take it. And the reason I bring this up is, if you're similar to me in that sense, that you're mentally strong or you feel you need to build more mental strength, but you know you quit things when they get difficult, or you know you quit things when they get painful, or you know you quit things when they get uncomfortable, kill plan B. Don't give yourself that plan B, because you'll take it. You know, you are what you repeatedly do. And the reason I went to the Sahara was, one, because it was the first time in a long time, definitely since I set up my business first, that I set a goal for myself that I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to hit it. And I wasn't sure until I crossed the finish line in the Sahara. Until that day and that minute and that second, I wasn't 100% sure, because there were so many things that could have gone wrong. There were so many variables that were unfamiliar. I'd never ran more than a marathon. I'd only ran my first marathon 4 months before. I'd never done anything multi-day. I had no idea how my body would respond to the heat. I'd never done anything of that nature. So there was so much confusion, or not even confusion, so much uncertainty on whether I was going to be able to complete it. So I couldn't give myself an option. I had to go out there with the thought process that you put in all the work, you prepare and do absolutely everything that you can do and control the controllables while you're out there, because of the variables. You know, a sandstorm hit on night 2. You know, for those of you who listened to that episode about the fucking thing that was stuck into the ground of the tent, smashing through one of my tent mates' hands. And that's completely outside of your control. You know, running through snakes at fucking nighttime and avoiding getting bitten by a snake, completely out of your control for the most part, because you can't control what's in your physical environment. But I could control the food I was eating. I could control the training I did in advance. I could control trying to get my recovery right each evening. And they were the things I focused on. So they were the things that expanded. But I also never focused on giving myself an out, because I knew it was going to get so difficult that if I did have an out, I would have taken it. So if you're somebody that has quit more things than you haven't, particularly when you get uncomfortable and it gets difficult, try killing the plan B. Try not giving yourself the plan B and just fully committing to plan A. Because when you fully commit to plan A, in a lot of cases, there is no need for plan B. And then the last lesson, which is, I fucking hate saying this because I live, this is one of these things that when I get asked on other podcasts, they're like, you know, what do you believe that's crazy that other people don't believe? I'm like, ah, bollocks. I'm going to end up quoting something like the law of attraction, which I do believe in, which is see it, believe it, achieve it. And that's very much a, I'm not a huge fan of Rhonda Byrne's The Secret, just because the law of attraction, which I believe in, you know, I do believe that the universe conspires to give you the things that you want, but I think you need to match that with putting the work in, you know. And the reason I don't like that law of attraction message by itself, and I'll tie it back to the example I've spoken in this whole episode, believing and seeing I could run through the Sahara from myself to use yourself, which is, you're always your own best example, as I said earlier, or run into the Arctic. If you didn't put in the work, that shit's not going to fucking happen. In the Arctic, in the case of the Arctic, you fucking die. Like, for that episode that I did, there's so many things that could potentially kill you in the Arctic because of the cold, the frostbite, the hypothermia, the physical injury. There's so many things that could potentially end your life in the Arctic. You can't fucking just wish for that shit to happen. You can't just fucking hope it manifests itself into reality without putting in any of the work. Because if you do that shit, you're going to fucking die. And, but with that, that belief system of the law of attraction and seeing it and believing it and achieving it, I think is so important, because I genuinely believe wholeheartedly that you can achieve fucking anything. If you surround yourself with the right people, if you put in the work, you put the right knowledge into your mind, you control your mindset and the way you're seeing things, you can achieve nearly anything. There's certain, as I said, certain genetic components that are going to come against it, but for the most part, particularly the things we have our self-limited creation, our self-limiting beliefs on, you know, there's no good guys out there, there's no good girls out there, I can't start a business, I won't be a good personal trainer, it's a saturated market, I can't get in shape, I've tried every diet, all these beliefs that or opinions that aren't true. They're just not true. They're opinions. That's all they are. They're not facts. But when you see something in your mind, you can hold it in your hand, but you have to put in the work. And the secret to that is becoming who you need to be and then act like that person and wait for reality to catch up. Like, that's the fucking secret. You know, to get what you want, you have to deserve what you want. And I remember when I was running through the Sahara first, and when I was training for that, this is how I lived my life. When I ran that first 2 kilometers where I nearly got sick, I remember thinking, okay, what would a person who can run 6 back-to-back marathons in the Sahara do? How would they live? What decisions would they make? And that's when I broke down my pyramid of prioritization. I'm like, okay, well, firstly, someone that can run 6 back-to-back marathons needs to be able to run 1. So I need to become that person, act like that person, and wait for reality to catch up. So as a result, I'm like, well, someone that could run 6 back-to-back marathons probably runs most days on their training days, and they gradually build up the runs. Okay, check, do that. Somebody that can run 6 consecutive days probably has their nutrition dialed in to fuel their body. So that actually led me to learning more about fat adaption, where I could use my fat stores or a fat fuel source so I didn't hit the wall or bonk on longer distances. So I did that. So check. And then the hardest part, what would the mindset of somebody who runs 6 back-to-back marathons look like? And that was difficult, because I remember thinking, they're tough, they're mentally disciplined, they're willing to sacrifice comforts and parts of their life in order to make themselves mentally stronger. They're working away from expedience and delaying gratification to hit their end goal. And I remember when I heard that first and thought about that first, I remember thinking, oh fuck, I was like, that sounds like a lot of effort. But that was the choice. When you set the goal and you reverse engineer it and become the person you need to be and then act like that person, it makes it a lot clearer. And then you can decide if you want to do it. You can decide, do you want to pay the cost? Do you want to do the effort? And that goes for everything. You know, if you want to start your own business and become really successful in business, act like that person and wait for reality to catch up. What does somebody who has a really successful business do? What do they focus on? They focus on providing value to people. They focus on services or products that make the world a little bit better. Or, you know, in the case of like McDonald's or Burger King, they provide a service or a product that people need, may not necessarily be making the world better, but they're providing something that a lot of people need, which is fast food, convenient food. And that's what they do. Same thing with people in shape. What do people in shape do? How do they make decisions? Well, they normally prioritize their gym sessions. They normally prioritize their workouts. They either get a personal trainer or an online coach, or they educate themselves in nutrition so they know what foods work for them. Become who you need to be. Act like that person. And then just wait for reality to catch up. Like, if you can see something in your mind, you can hold it in your hand and realize if you put in the work and just do it right day by day and focus on the small component parts, i.e. your day. Did I get today right? Did I eat my meals today? Did I serve people today? Did I get my workout in today? Was I a good dad or mom or brother, sister, son or daughter today? Was I the husband or wife, boyfriend or girlfriend I wanted to be, the best version of myself today? And then let that compound over time. Let that snowball over time. Tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. That's the secret. Like, there is no quick fix. There is no silver bullet supplement for losing weight. There is no get rich quick scheme for business. There is no do this one thing on Valentine's Day and you'll have an amazing loving relationship. There is no do this amazing thing on your birthday and your son, daughter, husband or mother or father will love you forever. You have to do it consistently over time and get that right if you want it to thrive. You know, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably not somebody who's just fucking surviving. You probably want your life to thrive in some way. And hopefully these 10 lessons will help you do that. Just to recap, number one. Oh, that was really fucking like getting serious. I'm going to break this up with I should really like tell a joke right now. I should tell a joke right now and just like lighten the mood, because the mood's probably all serious and shit now and people are like, oh, fuck. Anyways, just to recap with a lighter tone. You need to break goals into smaller parts. Understand the pain will go away. You need to build the mental strength slowly every day. All limitations are self-created. Your own worst enemy lives between your two ears. You can't do things for other people. It needs to be for you. Don't put people on a pedestal. If you fail to prepare, prepare to fail. You can't give yourself an option to quit or you'll take it. And see it, believe it, achieve it. There are 10 lessons that I learned running through the Sahara and the Arctic. And again, I'm not sure how much... I never know with these episodes. Like, I fucking never know if they're providing value or helping. Like, I never have anything planned for these ones. So I hope it helped. I hope you got value from it. Please let me know if you did. Or if you didn't, be like, Brian, what the fuck are you talking about for an hour and 10 minutes? Let me know. Because I never know with these ones. Because I try and keep the podcast predominantly guest-based. I've done a couple of solo Q&As recently. Just because of deadlines with the book and not being able to prioritize the interviews with certain people. But these ones I never know because I'm just pressing recording and talking. So yeah, hopefully you enjoyed it. If you did, let me know. Hit me up on Instagram DM or tag me on your story. Let me know what you thought. And that's everything from today's episode. Hope you enjoyed. Catch you all real soon.